Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 61 for May 30th, 2008, Windows 7. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/Windows. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and our special guest once again this week from her blog at ZDNet, all about Microsoft. It's Mary Jo Foley. Hello, Mary Jo.
Hello.
Good to have you back. Paul Thurrott from the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. And the topic of the day, Paul, Windows 7.
Am I allowed to talk now?
You may speak. I had to hold my hand up and say, talk to the hand.
I got the virtual throat slit side. You know.
Yeah. Cut.
Shut up.
So the All Things Digital Conference, or the D Conference, which is Walt Mossberger's big party for digital people. And by the way, Microsoft's been a big player there. That was the place last year that Bill Gates and Steve Jobs got on stage. Together. Mm-hmm. Gates and Ballmer on stage this time and showing off Windows 7 with a touch interface. Yeah. Sort of.
Well, the more I think about this, you know, I Mary Jo and I were talking the other day, and you know, there's not a lot of stuff going on in the world of Windows 7, you know, lately. And so finally they're going to show something. And a lot of people have written stories that have said, you know, Microsoft announces first Windows 7 feature, but you know, they actually mentioned last December that they were going to have multi-touch in Windows 7. So all they really did was just show off some multi-touch demos, which may or may not be part of Windows 7. They just look like demos to me. So I don't know.
Did you get to go to this, Mary Jo?
No, I wasn't there. I was actually watching a live web chat about it, and everybody was so breathless about it. But when I saw the web demo, I was like, that's it?
Well, that's the funny thing. When you see multi-touch in person, it's really easy to go, ooh, ah, until you actually start thinking about how you might use it.
And then, that's the thing, not to dump all over it, but, you know, I love my iPhone. I use it every day. There's absolutely no doubt that I get on the internet more with it and so forth. But, you know, one of the things I really can't stand about it is that the screen gets so smudgy. Yeah. And so now I think, well, I mean, I'm looking at this 24-inch screen I have in my office. Do I want to touch this thing?
Right.
You know, I don't want anyone to go near it, let alone my greasy fingers all over it. So, I mean, what is the usage scenario here? Is it really all that common, or is it something that will be akin to the way people use, you know, tablets today, or those external tablets that, you know, graphic artists draw with and so forth? I mean, is this really are we really going to be touching a lot of computers?
And, you know, it was funny because one of the Microsoft guys saw my comments saying I wasn't interested in having touch on my laptop. And he said, well, obviously you have no imagination because, you know, the laptop of today is not the laptop of tomorrow. And I was like, well, you should have shown it on a demo laptop then, because showing it on a regular laptop, I agree with Paul. I don't want to touch it.
It's a failure of imagination.
She's not a team player. Is what
I'm not a team player.
Don't you have any imagination, Mary Jo?
I don't.
It's funny.
But, you know, he brought up an excellent point. Like, you know what it would have been cool to see that on? Would be on an one laptop per child laptop running XP, or even if you wanted to show it running Windows 7, you know, with people using touch on that. That would have been more interesting.
I'm sympathetic with the idea that we need better user interfaces, but
that user interface is voice control.
Well, but wait a minute, Paul. It turns out I think this is harder to do, and voice control raises issues too. Are you going to sit in an office with 20 people all going, computer, start, Windows, Word?
All doing it with their beeping cell phones now. I was at a softball game with 6-year-old girls last night, and one of the fathers who was supposed to be helping out at first base was using one of those, you know, cell phones that they have on
the Nextel things.
It's a beep beep, and he's talking to some guy. And
so annoying.
The kids on the field are getting all distracted, and I'm thinking to myself, "What? You know,
so annoying.
What is this?
Well,
technology?
Multiply and, that times 50 people in an office.
Yeah.
I'm not. You know, I think we do need better user interfaces, but oddly enough, this 19th century keyboard And this 1970s mouse still seemed to be the best thing there.
Yeah.
Well, I think obviously we're going to be looking at a mixture of all these things, but you know, as today's children have shown, and I am so utterly incapable of doing, you can take a keyboard the size of a chiclet and go nuts on it and create incredible amounts of text in a very short period of time. So certainly we could support all kinds of different input types.
Do you use a touch? I mean, Paul says he doesn't use it that much on his phone or doesn't want to. Mary Jo, do you have a touch device of any kind? Do you use it, a tablet PC or an iPhone?
No. God, no.
I got to tell you, when it comes to the tablet stuff, there is one time a year maybe, and it would be the type of thing Mary Jo would be involved in as well. But you're in a meeting and somebody stands up and goes to a whiteboard and starts drawing pictures. Mm-hmm. And you think, yeah, you know, right now it'd be kind of neat to flip this thing around and draw a picture of it. And right, then you whip out your digital camera, take a photo, and you say, screw that. And mm-hmm, you don't really need to take notes.
Right.
And my
I can type so much faster.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. You keep thinking there's got to be something better than a keyboard and a mouse, but it's hard to come up with exactly what that might be.
Yeah. Right.
I use the touch on my iPhone to mostly show off. You know, when I'm showing pictures, I'll throw the picture across, right? Or I'll size it by the pinch. And you know what? It is very intuitive. It's very natural. It does have that issue you raised, Paul, with the fingerprints on the screen. But I don't know if it's necessary. I don't know if it's better than, you know, other ways of doing it. I don't know if it's better than a stylus. That was what Steve Jobs said, is we're not going to use a stylus. What a bad idea a stylus is.
Well, he's right about that. I mean, anyone who's owned a stylus-based device has lost the stylus.
Right.
You know, styluses are dumb. Styli or whatever. But I think the big deal about the iPhone, to be honest, from a UI perspective, is just that it's elegant looking. You know, the touch stuff is nice, but you know, like you said, you demo squeezing and flicking photos, but the reality is you don't spend a lot of time doing that. Not really. You know,
it's a good demo. And that's what happened to D, I think, is that everybody's going ooh and ah over a good demo.
Yeah. Well, remember what they showed last year at D was the Surface, another touch centric thing.
Still not out.
Yeah.
No, but you know, but that speaks to the problem of what's going on here, because the iPhone's been out for a long time. Everyone knows about it. Right. Most people have seen one. We get it. You know, we understand the touch interface.
Right.
So you're saying last year at this D conference, they showed off Surface. This year, they showed off a software version of Surface. It's going to be part of Windows 2 years from now. What's going on here? They haven't shown anything. Right. They showed that they can take the power of a tiny cell phone and blast it out to an enormous PC. Congratulations, Microsoft.
Well done.
I mean, seriously, what am I looking at?
You know what I thought? So, to defend the idea of touch, though, the one place they've shown touch lately that I thought was cool was, did you guys see when they did that whiteboard demo of using touch, like a full screen size thing that's on a wall? There I see where you'd use touch.
Like the CNN touch wall that they used during the election results and so forth.
Yeah. Okay. But on a coffee table, no. On a sphere, whenever we finally see the Surface sphere, no. I just think there are places to use touch. I don't think the laptops of today are those places.
No, but
what would a laptop of tomorrow look like that would make it suddenly be good for touch?
Well, maybe if it was smaller, like a cell phone.
See, I think Apple's going to scoop Microsoft on this one, too. In fact, there's some thought they might announce this in 2 weeks. A tablet size, you know, Nokia 810, maybe a little bit bigger sized.
Well, okay. But the bigger issue here is this. They've been very quiet about Windows 7 and on purpose. So the one time they actually decide they're going to say something about it, they show off a feature they've already discussed that is already well known and is not particularly compelling on a laptop. And that's all they've said about it. I mean, and maybe, I really don't know. There's a lot more going on in Windows 7 that will make this thing very exciting. Maybe. But could you show one of those things? Just one? I mean, I know that they're, you know, under-promising, over-delivering, that kind of stuff. But to me, when the dust settles on this, I don't feel like I saw anything.
Yeah. Well, plus, I think another thing we are seeing, which keeps coming back over and over, is Microsoft's Apple envy. And it just keeps coming back over and over.
They seem to have a lot of envy. They got Google envy. They got Apple envy.
Sure.
Why, Microsoft? You're number one. You don't have to answer.
Because they like to think of themselves as innovative, and they're not innovative.
Right.
And
have they ever been an innovator, really?
No, no. I mean, no, not from a technology standpoint. I would argue that they are innovative from sort of a business standpoint.
Yeah.
And you might make some sort of vague argument that bringing technology to the masses that maybe otherwise would have been just provided to a niche market is in some ways innovative, maybe. But no, I think that they popularize technology. Mm-hmm. You know, they once they do something, they make it, you know, the norm. But you know, companies like Google, which is innovating, obviously, with cloud computing type things, and Apple, which is just innovating all over the consumer space, I think those companies really irk Microsoft because it's really in their face, because you can't look at those companies and not think innovation.
So it's just jealousy. It's just a wanting to be, because look at Microsoft still is the big earner. I mean, it's not like they're, you know, they're doing okay.
Yeah, they're doing great. Sure.
You know, in fact, sometimes I think innovating is probably not a good procedure for making the most money. Necessarily.
Yeah, and innovating is overrated, I think, at least from a business standpoint.
Yeah. Innovative is costly. It's risky.
The innovator's dilemma, right? The people who are first to market are often the ones who get forced out first as well.
Yep. Bill Gates said, basic, good idea. You need one for the Altair. He said, a mouse, good idea. DOS, a good idea. Windows, a good idea. None of this was invented at Microsoft, but all of it was brought to maturity by Microsoft.
Sure.
And that's where the money is. Steven Sinofsky, the senior vice president for Windows, gave an interview at CNET.
Which we can distill down to about 3 or 4 words.
Yeah, would you? Because I like your synopsis of this. He says, we're communicating that we're about to communicate.
Yeah. We'd like to communicate about communicating. I think we used the phrase lowering expectations earlier, you know.
So what is the timeline? What do we, I mean, have they said anything new about Windows 7 that we didn't know already, besides a cool demo of Touch?
I don't think they did.
Well, the only thing which you could, but I think Paul has made the point that he already knew this. I didn't know they had said this definitively, but they came out this week with Sinofsky's Q&A and said, MinWin is not the kernel of Windows 7. So this is interesting because MinWin is the stripped down version of the core of Windows that Microsoft itself leaked via a webcast.
Exactly.
So yeah. they are saying, no, something we said before isn't true.
Our leak was wrong.
Our leak was wrong.
That's the problem with leaks, right?
Yeah, the problem with leaks.
You know, obviously they're touchy about MinWin as well.
Yeah.
You know, because is a matter of pedantics in some way or semantics, anyway.
It is.
What, Mary Jo, what is MinWin?
Well, the way they described MinWin was it was the essence of the core of Windows. It would be way stripped down, and they were going to kind of rebuild on this leaner core.
It's the kernel.
Right. It's the kernel, which they hate to use the K word, as Paul and I talked about.
Leo, it's not the kernel. I don't want to get a phone call.
Why don't they want to use the word kernel?
Because they don't want to say they're changing things at the kernel level, because that puts people into a complete panic.
Scares people, yeah.
You can understand why.
Yeah.
So MinWin was supposed to be this idea that they'd get Windows leaner and meaner, and it would be less dependencies, more modularized and componentized. Now, what's interesting is they're still going to do that, and they've been working on doing that. You know, with Windows Server, they've been doing that, and they've been doing that all along since they were developing Vista. But they don't want anyone to think they're changing the kernel in Windows 7.
Right.
That's the key takeaway from this week's interview.
So, but
and yet, even though they're not changing the kernel, they also want you to believe that Windows 7 is a major new Windows version. Usually, the way you know that is they change the kernel. Right. It's kind of a, I don't know what you call that.
Well, that's 22.
So they said we're going to do something called MinWin, which is not a kernel, but really is a new kernel. But now they're saying we're not going to do that.
Right.
I think
it's
what
not
their argument
be 7.
Is. Okay. It was sort of a research project, you know, and if you go back and look at that original video, you know, the guy, the language is sort of vague. You know, he says, you know, we took the Windows 7 kernel because, you know, that's the most current version as of today that they're working on internally. And, you know, we applied this MinWin process to it and came away with something that was really small and much smaller than Vista's kernel is today. And people got really excited and said, oh, great, the next version of Windows is going to be teeny and it will be light and fast and, you know, sounded wonderful. But I guess what they're saying now is, you know, we didn't promise that. I mean, that was just a,
we did it, but we're not going to deliver it.
we don't know why we showed that off. We don't know why we put the video on the net. You know, we don't know why we said those things, but we're not doing that.
Is that, do you think, to reassure people that they're not making any substantive changes in 7?
Yes, definitely.
and it's the business community and the developer community that's most worried about.
Well, you know, remember the big complaint about Vista, whether it's warranted or not, is that it introduced major compatibility issues, you know, compared to XP of today.
Right.
And, you know, this freaked out a lot of people out. And what they want people to believe, and because I think it's true too, is that, you know, the compatibility model is not changing for Windows 7. So presumably, any compatibility issues that we're having today or we had a year ago will be ironed out by the time Windows 7 appears. So this is something you won't have to worry about next time.
Mm.
Which, by the way, is the language they use when they describe an R2 release on the server side. Mm-hmm. Those interim releases where they don't change the core of the product, they don't change the compatibility model. It's an interim release between the major releases. You know, but they're not using that language with Windows 7 because, you know, again, they're trying to push the notion that Windows 7 is a major release.
Was it the Gartner group that we talked about that said that Microsoft's only hope was to start over?
Sure.
Yeah.
Gartner doesn't make operating systems, do they?
They don't know what they're doing. I understand. It's not. They're not the only people saying that maybe it's time to... I mean, I think that starting from scratch is not a bad idea every, say, 10 or 20 years with an operating system, just because things change.
And they are doing that. Like, they're doing it as a research project. They've shown this thing called Singularity, which is not based on Windows, and it's a new operating system, right?
Interesting.
But, you know, to like plant the seed in people's mind that, hey, Windows 7 might not be Windows at all, that's like putting the wrong message out there and being really off base.
That terrifies people.
Yep. There are a billion people using Windows today. I mean, you do want them to be able to move along to the next version, you know. It's understandable. I mean, and until that's not the case, you know, if Windows were ever to take some sort of a huge nosedive, I think that would give them the impetus to do something completely different. But until that happens, or unless that happens, I mean, you can't just leave this stuff behind.
Right.
Unless there's some huge architectural change that allows you to disvirtualize everything or whatever. But I mean, without getting off into sort of fantasy land, I mean, you know, the next version of Windows is going to be Windows, obviously.
Anything else that we learned about Windows 7, whether it's at the D conference or anywhere else? I mean, anything new? PDC?
So they opened up registration for PDC, which is that... I don't know what to call it. They don't have it every other year, but it's every so often they have this professional developers conference.
As opposed to the ADC, the amateur developers conference? Do they do that?
No, they don't. sort of Linux type comment there. But anyway.
Oh, wow.
No, I joke. I'm a jester. You know, the last PDC was in 2005, but... the 2003 PDC, of course, was a huge deal and was the big sort of Vista coming out party.
So saying there's a PDC coming out is another way of Microsoft saying, get ready. Well, changes are coming.
That would be the logical time for them to say release beta 1 or, you know, do that kind of thing.
Yeah. Something. Some good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you think about PDC 2003 and where that fell after the release of XP, right? Almost exactly 2 years later, having a PDC now in late October 2008 is just about 2 years after Vista shipped. Now, we all know what went wrong with Vista, so that schedule was all out of whack, but Steven Sinofsky is a lot of things, but one thing he's very good at is cracking the whip and maintaining a schedule. So presumably, you know, this thing will ship when he says it will ship. Although I guess there's some debate about that as well.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was another thing that happened to D, which was rather unfortunate. So the very morning that Sinofsky does the Q&A with news.com and says, it's coming out in 2010, Ballmer gets on stage and says it's coming out in late 2009.
Oops.
Right.
Oops.
That's
and then when I ping Microsoft about it, I'm like, so, okay, who's wrong? Who's not telling the truth or who misspoke? And they said, well, no one did.
Yes,
okay,
they're both right.
It's coming up both times.
What's a month or two among friends? Well, but it actually does matter.
You wrote a post about that. I mean, it's not a month or two between friends.
No.
A month or two between friends would be if it was March and April.
Exactly.
Right. But I mean, we're talking about the holiday season.
Yeah. And that's what's the difference. So, I mean, if everybody's betting, they've got to come out at holiday 2009, right? I mean, are they going to do again what they did with Vista and miss the holiday season?
Is the holiday season important for Windows?
It is for retail.
That's when they sell new computers.
For a new version.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think about this. I know that, and I didn't look this up, but I know that, you know, Windows 98 Second Edition, Windows Millennium Edition, and Windows 2000 all shipped, you know, relatively early in the year.
Yeah, was XP, it summer?
95 was summer.
Yep. 95 was summer. It was right before the school season, which was perfect.
Yep. That would make sense. Summer would make sense.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, obviously an August release is perfect because you can hit the back to school stuff as well as the holidays.
Yeah. Yeah. January, not so good.
Not a big software month, as it turns out.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why.
Well, especially also on the business side, end of year budget stuff. And, you know, like, people aren't really thinking about buying new software in the first quarter.
Interesting.
Usually.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, Ballmer was talking about with sales at the D conference and Windows sales. You know, he compared himself.
Well, this was more of a retort, right? Because you got to remember that Walter Mossberg, a huge promoter of Apple product.
Yeah.
He's bad. And he really pushed Ballmer and Gates on the whole, you know, Apple envy thing and don't you, you know, Apple's making inroads and don't you think this and don't you think that? And he really kind of pushed it. And Ballmer kind of finally pushed back, I think to his credit, by the way, and said, look, you know, 290 million PCs are going to go out this year with our software on it. 10 million are going to go out with Apple's. We don't really play in the same market. I know you think we do, but we really don't.
That's good. Yeah.
And, that's a good point. I think it's important to keep that kind of stuff in perspective. I mean, not to take away from what Apple's doing, because obviously this is a hugely successful company. I don't know of any tech company that can generate the kind of buzz that Apple gets.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But in some ways, that buzz is out of proportion with, you know, reality.
Well, that's kind that's kind of what I was saying, where Microsoft shouldn't feel so
defensive.
I mean, they're still the big guy.
Yep.
Sure. I've said this before. I wish they would be more aggressive about this kind of stuff. I said this to them. You know, I've talked to Microsoft about this. You know, Apple has the switcher ad stuff. They don't really have an effective counter to that. I think we talked in the podcast about that lame Bruce Springsteen, awful internal thing.
That was internal. It was only intended for internal purposes.
Absolutely. I completely understand that was not a response to the switcher stuff. But you know what? To the average person out in the world, they look on the left and they see switcher ad for Apple and they see this lame thing for Microsoft. And, you know, do the math. Right?
Yeah. No, you're right. Can't deny that. Maybe they just need a better ad agency. Maybe it's just that simple.
They need a lot of things.
I think they need to not be so afraid of poking fun at themselves and this stuff.
Maybe that's it. Now, Ballmer's never been afraid of poking fun at himself.
But the rest of the company is just like, we can't talk about our competition. I don't even know if they're even thinking about doing a retort to the Mac switcher. And it could be funny, you know?
Yeah.
All Microsoft has to do is come out with a page that is the 300 new features of Vista that looks exactly like the Apple page. It would be hilarious. You know, it wouldn't be hard. It's not hard to make fun of this stuff. You know, I mean, Apple kind of sets themselves up for it in many ways. They're so arrogant, but you know, I just, unfortunately, or for better or worse, I should say, out in the real world, you know, people can only look at what's out there. So, you know, Microsoft's message is very conservative and, you know, Apple's very aggressive, so, you know, they get points for that.
Now, PDC, Ray Ozzie's going to give the keynote. I guess that makes sense because it's a technology conference. And
sure.
And if anybody's going to say where Microsoft's headed, it would be Ray.
You'd hope.
Well, at least he and Sinofsky and Ballmer maybe can agree on a ship date. If nothing else, they can work on that.
Yeah. Well, they definitely are, you know, going to continue the live mesh conversation from Mix, and they've already said that PDC would be a big live mesh coming out party around the platform side, so like around SDK and all that kind of stuff. So we'll hear, exactly how they think third party is going to be able to tie into Live Mesh.
Oh, interesting. So PDC really may be a mesh conference, not a Windows 7 conference.
It will be a bunch of stuff.
It'll be everything. It'll be all the platforms.
Oh, okay. You don't do PDC and not talk about everything.
Yeah.
This is professional. I think they'll.
I'm sorry.
It's not amateur hour.
I'm an amateur. I'm sorry.
I think another thing, PDC will be like along SOA stuff and modeling. I mean, it's everything. It's like such a mishmash of anything that might appeal to developers. Right.
But it'll be translucent, not transparent.
Exactly.
Just like my skin.
That was a phrase Sanofsky used, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, that was from
I was going to say, it comes from a memo that you wrote about. So.
It does. Yeah. So I got a copy of this memo that Steven Sanofsky put on his internal Microsoft blog, where he talks about his understanding of the difference between transparent and translucent, and they should stop being transparent and start being translucent. you can't make this stuff up, right? It's real.
It's such a subtle difference, but...
And so his idea is like, here's all the stuff we did wrong with Vista. We were too open about all the split dates. We were too open about the features we cut. And we need to not be so open about that because it hurts customers and partners. He doesn't say it hurts Microsoft.
I wouldn't disagree with him on that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with, like, you know, you don't want to jerk your customers and partners around. At the same time, you also want to give them some information. Like, I think it's incredible we don't know anything at all, really, about Windows 7 2 years after Vista, because if you're developing software, you kind of need to know right now what they're doing.
Yep. Sure. I mean, especially just within the context of things like, I want to take advantage of this technology that's in Windows Vista. This is going to be in Windows 7, right? You know, you're going to keep going with this, right? We're not going to just hit a wall and you're going to move on to something completely different. Even that sort of thing, not leading edge stuff, but I just want to know that this technology is, you know, going to be updated. It's still an active area of development for you. You know, I think that there's a happy medium between Sanofsky and Jim Alchin, and we're not there.
Alchin was too open. He said too much.
Well, maybe. Although, again, I have to say, for Microsoft of the time, back in 2003, it was so exciting to see, and so liberating to see this company, which had always been very conservative, really open up. You know, they started blogging and talking about stuff internally, and it was really kind of a neat thing. And it just came back and slapped them in the face.
Yeah.
And one of my fears, which I think I've voiced on the podcast a few times now, is that they'll never do that again. Right? It hurt them so badly that the natural reaction is to go in the complete opposite direction.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's what Steven Sanofsky is. He is the complete opposite direction. On the flip side, I would say, you know, the Windows division has been dominant for so long. That grew to be sort of an arrogant group of people as well, and running roughshod over the company and so forth. I mean, in some ways, maybe they also need someone of Sanofsky's strengths, right, to guide them down a steadier path.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tough call. But, you know, yeah, the current level, the cone of silence, I guess it's been called, is a little tough.
It's easy to make fun of somebody when they say translucency, not transparency. But I think I understand what he's saying. He's saying we should strike a balance, kind of.
If he's saying that, I wish he would do it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's something that sounds good on paper, but the way it's being interpreted in reality is not balanced.
There are probably opposing forces within Microsoft. Some people, as you said, like Alchin, wanted to tell, you know, open the kimono. Others want, you know, a tight-lipped nothing, right? I mean, is that what's going on, Mary Jo? I mean, are there these different forces in there?
Yeah, I mean, and there's you know, people who totally back Sanofsky's play and say he's totally right and we need to get this under control. And then there's people who, they don't say it publicly because it wouldn't be so good for their career, but who think he's on a totally wrong tangent. And they want somebody who's more towards the middle.
The modern world does want transparency, right? I mean, it seems to be... That's the expectation nowadays from customers. They want you to tell them everything, and they get mad if you don't.
That's what blogging is all about, right? That's one very basic way you can be transparent.
Yeah. Should Microsoft be doing more blogging? Should Ballmer have a blog? Ozzy?
Well, Microsoft blogs more than any company on earth, I think.
Yeah, they really do. Yeah, I think there's like over 5,000 Microsoft blogs.
That's as a whole. I mean, there's a Windows Vista blog, right? Do they actually ever say anything on the Windows Vista blog?
No, not that's really. More of a PR vehicle. Right. The Windows Vista blog is, yeah.
Right.
But other people at Microsoft are pretty, you know, there's some who are very forthcoming. There are some who are not. There are some who've gotten in huge trouble for putting stuff on their blog.
But this is the thing about Microsoft that I think for somebody, a casual observer, isn't immediately apparent, is that Microsoft isn't just one company with just one point of view. There's a huge amount of heterogeneity inside the company, right? It's a lot of different companies in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely. There's as much communication between parts of Microsoft as there is between Microsoft and other companies, which is to say not much.
Now, if you're going to use as examples, you're going to use somebody like Apple, who is completely opaque. I mean, Apple doesn't say anything until, you know, Steve says to say so. And that's worked pretty well for them. Is it
is that what Sanasi's trying to do?
Is it because Apple's so small? Can Microsoft get away with that?
Apple is small, but they also have smaller. I mean, Apple's a huge multi-billion-dollar corporation, right? I mean, they're not small, compared to Microsoft, they're small. Apple also has that single guiding light.
Right.
Right. That Microsoft really doesn't have. Even Bill Gates doesn't really.
He was never even at his height that way.
I don't think so. I mean, I understand that within Microsoft, how important he was and is and so forth, but I don't. He's not as forceful of a personality in the sense that he had to have his finger in every single thing. And, you know, this dialogue box has to be changed because, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, Steve Jobs chooses
the T-shirts in the Apple store. He chooses the supplier for the T-shirts in the Apple store.
Sure. Micromanager, you might say.
Everything. Right. Because he has such a – and I think it benefits Apple because he has such a focus on quality. But you can do that when you're
There are limits to that, right? So in other words, you can only be in so many businesses before that breaks down.
Right.
So Apple, I think, has hit that. I think they're at that point. They're not at the breaking point. They're at the right point.
So Mary Jo, is that what Steven Sinofsky is calling for? Is that kind of clamp down?
Mm. Well, some people in Microsoft are calling for it. I mean, I've heard talk that there are people who say we need to be more like Apple. We need to be like have the big reveal like they have it, you know, at Mac. You know, because Microsoft's so much bigger and they have so many more partners, they're not a closed company like Apple is. It's virtually impossible for them to plug the leaks.
They need to tell people, and not even the leaks.
To tell people what they're doing.
They need to do PDC and WinHack. They need to go to the D conference
What they should do right now is start blogging about Windows 7. And reveal something every couple of days. And I'm not talking big stuff. I mean, really small things. You could just start off with really low-level stuff and say, hey, you know, the Superfetch works this way in Windows Vista, but we decided that, you know, if you optimize it this way, it'll be like 19% faster, and here's what we did. And it doesn't sound exciting, but as you do one of those things every couple of days or every week, over time, over the next year or 2 years, all of a sudden, what you get is this huge swell of information that by the time this thing comes out, you have the full picture.
Right. Right.
You
know, well, remember, there was a guy who was on the Windows 7 team who's been blogging anonymously. Shipping his blog is called Shipping 7, and started out revealing a couple little things, and Microsoft went so nutty to find him. I don't know if they ever found him, but it became like this witch hunt and crazy a bunch of crazy
like
people.
It was like the Russians going after Pavlov.
See, I think it's clear that Microsoft can never be like Apple in that respect. It's just, as you say, there's too many places it could leak. There's too many people. They have to, you know, talk to people in ways that Apple doesn't have.
Even if they pulled it off, what if they did? You show up at PDC and they've got the banners out like Apple has at Macworld, and then they come out and they do this big thing just like Apple. Everyone's going to say, "Oh, look, they're copying Apple again."
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, I have made fun of the Linux community for just aping what's going on in Windows. I think this would apply here as well. You've got to find your own vibe. Yeah. There's no reason you can't be cool and not be just like Apple. You know, find your own vibe.
The other thing to remember, too, is Apple does not play in the business market. They have, like, next to no share in the business market. And in the business market, companies really do need to know what Microsoft's going to do because they're basing, like, huge purchasing decisions. And, you know, mission-critical apps are being written on Windows. And it's, like, it's fun to be secret versus, you know, need to know on the business side.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, begs the question of something I think we talked about the last time Mary Jo was on, that maybe what they really need is to break off the consumer stuff and just pursue these things completely separately.
Right.
You know, the business version can keep selling X hundred million copies a year, and they can do something really cool yep. you know, for consumers that where they could have the secrets and the big reveals and whatever.
Yep. Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. And I hear they're not even entertaining that idea.
Not
but
even,
for me,
yeah.
it's
nobody. Yeah. No interest no. in that at all.
No, but it's sad because what people want from Windows on the consumer side is so different from what they want on the business side. I mean, it's almost like you have, like if you said to people, give us your 10 most requested features, there would be no overlap.
Right.
Is Bill Gates involved in this at any point? I mean, I know he was at the D conference, but how dialed out is he? He's almost, when does he leave? Soon, right?
Next yep, June 30th.
One month.
Come on, this guy, he's been phoning it in for years. Come on.
But they trot him out. They still trot him out at events like the D conference because he's Bill
eventually
Gates.
Eventually, they'll have to use a two-wheel hand truck to get him out on stage or something. I mean,
oh, come on. Now, come on, Paul. You're just being silly now. He's Bill Gates.
He is Bill Gates. He is maybe the smartest businessman that's ever graced the planet. No doubt about it.
Is his mind on his job, though, now?
No. I don't think so, no. I mean, I also think that, you know, one of the problems under Gates was that they became successful in a very specific way. They had a very specific business model with Windows and the ecosystem and all that. And this model has not worked in any other business they've tried to enter.
Right.
And that's been the problem, the sort of short-sightedness of when you become successful, you get conservative, you do the same thing over and over again, rather than truly innovating and doing something cool and new. And I think that's what the new blood is occurring right now as people come and go from Microsoft will hopefully accomplish is just give them you know, new perspective.
Mm-hmm. Are they going to have a cake? What are they going to do on June 30th?
I think they're going to try to make it as invisible as possible yeah. because they don't want people to think Gates is leaving. They keep reinforcing that message. He's not leaving.
They made that great video, though, that they showed at right. his keynote, which I just
so blessed. Yeah, that was funny. Yeah, but at D, you know, even again at D, they were telling journalists, you know, behind the scenes, remember, Bill's still going to have 20% involvement in projects around here. You know, the last thing they want people to think is Gates is mentally right. or
yeah.
physically
so,
gone.
By the way, the fact that they had a metric attached to that
20%.
Is what makes it so sick.
Yeah.
by the way, those videos raise an interesting point because one of the few areas in which Microsoft really shows their funny personal side are on these little videos they make for shows like CES and right. the developer shows and so forth. And they never show them publicly. Very often,
I think they
though,
can't because of rights issues. You can't see
them. Come on. I mean, but they could be making goofy commercials with, yeah. you know, Gates and Ballmer in the car, like
bah,
in the Volkswagen
bah, bah.
Commercial.
That was very funny. I love
that. Stuff, if that was Microsoft's commercials, if that was how they advertised.
They do so well.
They would succeed. Yeah, exactly. People would yeah. just
they'd
eat
them
up. Yep.
Is it too late, though, to become that kind of the
funny? They're already doing it. They're just not doing it publicly. And people don't see this stuff. Is that
on YouTube? Because that's if you've never seen it, folks.
Da-da-da one.
Yeah, they're driving a Volkswagen. It's a play on a commercial that was big, you know, a few years ago.
Yeah, some kid's got a smelly couch or chair or something and put it in the back of the car.
So instead, Bill and Steve are driving around. It's just funny seeing them driving a Volkswagen. And they see a Sun server on the curb. And they pick it up and they put it in the back seat. And they're driving along and they go...
they throw it back up. But they completely ape the commercial, so they kind of nod their heads
it's
to the music.
Hysterical.
And he flicks the little hula dancer thing
I
on the dashboard.
I love it.
Yeah. Oh, well. It's good stuff.
Yeah. And they can get these big movie stars on this last one. I mean, they got, you know, everybody was in that, and it was very funny. Mm-hmm. Bill Gates calling all these people. I mean, they were really aping. They were doing exactly what PR is saying not to do. They were saying Bill's gone and he's looking for a job, which I thought was very funny. It did make it a kind
hey,
of
they could be the Jack in the Box of you know the computer industry and just have really fun, funny, quirky ads.
Hire a better agency.
Yeah.
You pointed out, Paul, that he's leaving the same day XP is leaving.
Coincidence or not?
Maybe he's taking it with him in a little box. So you're saying this is when XP, end of life for XP is June 30th also? Is that it?
Well, not end of life. The yeah. end of, I would
end
call
of
it
sales.
General retail availability.
And you there know, has been quite a bit of lobbying against that. That's not done anything. It's not slowed it down.
I wouldn't call it quite a bit of lobbying, but there's been some lobbying.
I saw an online petition.
Sure. Yeah. There you go. You've seen an online petition. So, but that, you know, that's how today's world work. That works. I mean, that represents some tiny, you know, percentage of the XP using population.
Right.
I got an email from someone today who sort of said, you know, aha, I knew this was going to happen. So now XP dies on June 30th. What happens to product activation? Does that mean I won't be able to activate Windows anymore?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
and
man.
It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, hold on a second, Tiger. You know, first of all, you know, support for XP doesn't end until 2014 or 15, depending on which version you're talking about. And that means we're just about, we're over halfway through its actual life cycle.
Right.
You know, so you know, relax. Everyone hates product activation, but let's not get crazy.
Yeah. And the other thing that's been really blown out of proportion around the June 30th date is this whole idea that OEMs are offering rollback to XP.
Yeah.
You know what? That's been the way it works. If you buy a license of Windows, you as a volume customer, you have rights to roll back to the old version. It's not the
same. Mary Jo, you're missing the point. This proves that Vista's a disaster.
I know. Well, that's crazy. Like, did you know that you could do a rollback?
I wish you would just admit that Vista is a disaster. Can we all just admit that to each other, please? This is the email I get, you know, and people, they just... Wow.
I don't even know if people really think that themselves. They just kind of, well, some people do. If you've had a bad experience.
Of course they do.
I was going to say, even people who haven't had an experience still seem to think they can weigh in.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. The email I was responding to as you guys came on was from someone who basically said, I've never used Windows Vista, but... All these points you're trying to make about it compared to XP are completely wrong. And here's why.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa. Yeah.
I mean, here's like just a bizarre anecdotal story. But I was in a Barnes & Noble the other day, and the clerk came up to me because we were talking, and I told him I had written a book about Microsoft. And he's like, so can you tell me why they launched Millennium? And I said, do you mean Vista? And he's like, yeah, that piece of crap that they just launched.
Wow, that's interesting.
I was like, wow. I said, are you a Windows user? No.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, well.
Well, that's kind of my point, is that perception is everything. And a lot of these people don't have a problem with Vista, but they just, that's what, you know,
well, you know what? Well, so the other thing, and as far as email trends go, the other thing that's starting to happen, and this is, I've gotten these all along, but I really have noticed in the past month or two how this has gone up, is I'll get email from people who say, you know, I resisted this Vista thing because I heard how horrible it was. And then, you know, they switched over at work, or I got a new PC and I didn't have a choice and I got Vista. And, you know, actually it's really nice.
Oh,
imagine that.
Oh, that's
because Microsoft usually just puts out this piece of crud over here in the corner. They don't really worry about it for too much. Did you think they delayed it for 5 years to get it wrong? Or what was the, you know, I mean, come on. I mean,
they did do, you know, to be fair, they did a lot of things wrong with Vista, and, you know, they paid the price, and they're paying the price still, and they're going to keep paying the price. Right. So,
sure.
We're going to take a break and come back and get a Windows tip from Paul and Paul's software.
Actually, we're not.
You're not? You don't want to do that?
I figured we'd just talk about Windows 7 the whole time this week. So
is your tip to hold off for Windows 7?
I hit the snooze button on the...
we can get one for Mary Jo. We'll take a break and we'll debate.
Jeez, no pressure.
We'll see who has to work harder in the next few minutes. But first, I want to mention Audible, our sponsor. Audible.com/Windows is a place to go. You can get yourself a free book if you're not already an Audible member. I want to encourage you to join Audible.com/Windows. 45,000 plus titles, not just books. Lectures, radio shows, events, debates, all sorts of stuff on there. Podcasts, even. Audible.com/Windows. Paul, I'm taking a chance here since you've got the snooze button on, but do you have a book you'd like to recommend?
I will come through. Actually, the one I've been listening to, I should say, is I might have mentioned this in passing last week because I had done a bunch of Audible stuff last week, but it's the I'm trying to think of the name of it. It's the part three of The Bush at War by Woodward.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to think of the exact name of it. It's, let me think, I'll look it up.
State of Denial.
Why does that sound right? But that
State
is
of
it.
Denial,
yeah.
Bush State at War. Denial. So he's written three volumes of this now.
Right. And there's been a sort of a turnaround there because the first two, there were some allegations that his close... access to the Bush administration gave him an overly positive view of how things were going in Afghanistan and Iraq. So part three is sort of his, it's almost like an apology because I think it tells the truer story of how things are really occurring there.
Now with Scott McLennan's book coming out, I think there's a lot more attention on how the press treated those early years of the Iraq war and particularly the buildup to war. So this should be very interesting to see what Woodward, who is you know, acclaimed by all because of his Watergate work, is one of the great investigative reporters of our era. So does he cop to maybe giving the president a pass, or does
in the book?
Yeah.
Oh no. No. It's an ugly story.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it.
It turns out the reason we went had nothing to do with the reason we went.
No, really? We're starting to find that out now, aren't we?
It's a thriller of sorts.
Well, it does sound like, with the name State of Denial, it does absolutely sound like a Thoreau book or a Follett book or something like that. This is State of Denial is book three of Bush at War, the series, which, by the way, all three of them are on audible.com. Does Woodward? No, he doesn't. I was going to say, does he read it?
No, I see. No, I wish he did, actually. I've read the other two in paper form. I've also read that Secret Man book, the story of Watergate. Sorry, that's not the one I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of the one, the former CIA guy.
Legacy of Ashes? Oh, there's so many.
Yeah.
Let me play a little bit. I'll just, so you can hear it. This is Boyd Gaines. This is a State of Denial.
He was the expert, and this was the sort of decision that required expertise. Still, Bush wondered privately to Card about pitfalls, if there was something he didn't see here. After all, his father had strong feelings.
Oh, yes, he did. I can't wait to read this. It sounds great. State of Denial, Bush at War. And notice I say read, Paul. You don't have to apologize. Audiobooks are a better way to read. They go into your brain, straight into your brain, no filtering through your eyes.
Straight
into your brain. Straight into your brain. I feel like a lot of times after I've read an audiobook that I've lived it, I feel like you see it. Sometimes I confuse, I think I've seen a movie that I haven't because I've listened to the book.
Yeah. And the book I was thinking of, by the way, is called Veil.
Oh, Veil.
It's the CIA. Yeah.
That's the Woodward. That's also a Woodward book, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't think that's audible, but that's a good one.
That's another great one. Well, you're into this stuff. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You like reading all this politics stuff. Audible.com/windows. If it's politics, if it's fiction, if it's history, there's a huge variety. Comedy, spirituality, it's all there. Audible.com/windows. We invite you to sign up and get your free book today, and we thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. So, Mary Jo, what kind of software are you using these days? I actually found a great Windows program, and I wrote it down, and I can't find my notes. That I thought it was a really cool program. I'll have to save it for next week. If I had known that you didn't have a software pick, I would have mentioned. What do you write with? Do you write in Word, Mary Jo?
I do.
Nothing fancy there, just nothing fancy. Plain old Word.
Sometimes even on Notepad.
Ooh.
Sure.
Wow. That's fancy.
Very fancy.
Well, I guess we're just going to wrap it up then, unless anybody has anything else to say. I'm so glad you could be here, Mary Jo.
Thank you again.
She is just fantastic. You've got to read her blog. Really, it's news.
I have a couple of questions I'd like to ask Mary Jo.
Oh, good. Please do. Yeah.
One was about, you had written something about this, I think just the other day, where you were talking about Windows Live and how Windows Live also falls under Steven Sinofsky's.
Yeah. Yep.
Tutelage there. So
I know.
Do you
it's
see,
interesting.
I mean, well, is he going to is he handling that in the same way? I guess I don't think so myself. But I mean, do you think that his policy is something that extends to everything that he is overseeing, or is that just specific to Windows 7?
Yeah, I think it is extending to Live. If you guys remember, like a year ago, Windows Live, they were pretty, or even like two years ago, they were pretty darn transparent. I mean, they would come up with a new service, throw it out there, and like blog about it. Like, hey, look what we just did.
They were spastic.
But now it's like, think of the last time. When did you last hear of a new Windows Live service? Hasn't been any in a while. And I don't think that's coincidental. I think they stopped them from being out there and public.
Do you think that has anything to do with tying Windows Live to Windows? You know, some of the plans to integrate them a little more closely and so forth?
Definitely. Because one thing we do know, because of, something else I got my hands on for the book, which was fun, is the planning memo I got passed on to me, how Microsoft's planning to more tightly integrate Windows 7 with Windows Live. And they can't, they can't tie them because of antitrust concerns. That's just not allowed under the EU and DOJ regimes. So what they're going to do is just make them more and more kind of work in sync and have the teams talk more because they hadn't really talked at all between each other before. And so Sinofsky, I think, is being charged with getting those two teams to get on the same page and to kind of crack down on the Windows Live side too and say, okay, guys, we can't be blabbing all our business out here. And
yeah, like, you guys have been doing too good. You're going to have to slow it down.
Let's quiet it down a little over here. Yeah, so Sanofsky's in charge of Windows Live. The one piece he's not in charge of, though, which is kind of interesting, is search. That of all the Windows Live pieces, he has nothing to do with search.
Interesting. So where does that fall under?
Search falls under Satya Nadella, who runs the advertising platform and services piece.
So what about Live Mesh? Where does that fit into this, or is that just completely separate?
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I know that's a Ray Ozzie project, and I know it sits in the hierarchy under Kevin Johnson, but after that, I don't know those guys are under.
I mean, I wonder if it gets special treatment because it is a pet project, right?
I think it does, yeah. Because I haven't really heard those guys talk about them having to deal with Sanofsky. So.
Yeah, yet. But yeah, it seems like maybe that would come eventually. Yeah. That's interesting. The other thing that occurred to me this week, and I don't mean to act like this was any great epiphany, but you know, if you think back to the mid 1990s, the big internal battle at Microsoft was whether the browser would become part of Windows or whether it would be separate. And the way I recall it was that Brad Silverberg was firmly in the IE should be separate camp, and Jim Alchin was the guy saying, no, it has to be part of Windows because, you know, the browser is a platform that could one day compete with Windows, and, you know, we can't allow that. Windows is the core product. And, of course, Alchin won out. The browser became part of Windows, for better or worse. I mean, I think technically it was a bad decision. But, you know, it's funny, when you look back at it now, suddenly the notion of a, you know, browser-based platforms, what we think of as utility computing or cloud computing, whatever, are very viable in a way that they weren't, you know, back in 1994, 95, whenever that was. Mm-hmm. Is it possible? I find this very hard to believe, but is it possible that those people at Microsoft at that time accurately foresaw the way things were going to go? Because I have to say, I you know, you think about Jetson's, you know, technology futures and so forth, and I don't know that I saw this so clearly that long ago.
Yeah, I'm doubtful, and it sounds like you are too. This is a company that almost missed the internet, right? I mean, so
right.
to assume that they actually had more of a clue than it looks like. I think they just didn't know.
Right. Okay. And, I think they lucked into it. And I have to say, when you look at companies like Google, who obviously have an amazing array of products, I mean, none of which necessarily are successful, but you know, they're really out there doing a Windows Live type of thing where they're just releasing. You have companies like Apple who play in at least two of the markets. You know, they have desktop operating systems. They have the mobile device. But they really don't have anything in the way of online services, at least anything decent. I mean, I know they have
.Mac. .Mac is terrible. Yeah.
.Mac is a joke. But Microsoft is the one company who actually plays in all of these markets that I think are necessary for the future, right? Desktop computing, mobile devices, and also the services stuff. Yeah. You know, and they have an awesome opportunity to tie these things together in ways that I don't think those other guys can do.
Yeah.
And and obviously Microsoft has a history of not, you know, implementing as well as the idea. But I think that's kind of interesting, you know, that they're ideally situated.
Yeah. I think we've talked about this before, too. But the whole concept of software plus services, you know, people really poo-pooed that when Microsoft first said it. And they said, oh, it's just their plan to keep, you know, Windows on the desktop relevant. But actually, if you look at how people work and how people want to use software and services, Microsoft has the best story.
Right.
I mean, people don't want to go 100% cloud right now. And if you go with Google, you put all your eggs in the cloud basket. And, you know, especially business users, they are just like, I do not want to put my data in the cloud. I can't for compliance reasons. I can't do that for a lot of different reasons. And I want a gradual solution with a lot of choices. And Microsoft actually offers that, believe it or not.
Yeah, they do. They do. It is sort of fall. I just purchased both of those books by Nicholas Carr. You know, he wrote The Big Switch, and then earlier, Does IT Matter? You know, and these sort of play into this discussion. But you know, obviously, moving from a strictly local software based world to cloud computing is a big jump.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe we get there. But yeah, Microsoft's, I think, middle of the road approach is actually the one that makes the most sense, but it also leaves them the one company that can, you know, really compete on both ends of that effectively. Yep. It's kind of interesting.
It is.
Well, we can read all about it in allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's Mary Jo's column on ZDNet. How about that for a segue, huh? Yeah.
Well, pretty good. He's, huh? That's what he does, by the way.
That's what I do for a living, my friend. I just sit here and I look for an opening and then
creates order out of chaos.
And by the way, the current article is Microsoft's grand plan to eliminate phone numbers. So if you want to know more about that, I think we should ask her about that.
We still can.
Well, I can tell you a little bit about that.
What's going on?
I just posted that today. So, you know, it was funny. I was looking back at some recent Bill Gates speeches that he gave when he was in Japan earlier this month, and I noticed he kept talking about phones being connected to Windows. He's like really pushing this idea lately, and I'm like, well, okay, what is going on there? And so I've been kind of snooping around about it, and I've got a source who passed me some information about this platform that Microsoft is building for telcos. It's codenamed Echoes. And Echoes is this thing to help them try to get more Microsoft services seeded among telco carriers, not just Windows Live, but like MSTV and the stuff they have codenamed Pink, which are some of the new consumer mobile cell services that they're building. And so the idea is it's quite complex. I try to explain it without being too complex on my site, but the idea is you could take using this platform as an intermediary, Windows Live, and there's a way that the platform could kind of obscure someone's contact phone number so that you wouldn't see it, but would still allow you to dial that person without knowing their number. And so, like, if say you wanted to call me and you had me on Live Messenger, but you didn't know my phone number, you could do it.
Yeah, it's called
you
Skype.
You could call me. Yeah,
it's like
Skype.
It's almost like IP addresses, right? You don't really need to know the IP.
Yeah. Right. So it's an interesting idea. I don't think people are going to see their phone numbers go away anytime soon. But this is, you know, more ideas to try to get Live out there in a broader way, because it right now is kind of a periphery play for them, and they want to grow that business very badly.
I love it. Bill Gates is, see, he's not gone. He's talking in Japan.
When he gives you 20%, that's what you get. Right?
Yeah, we can get rid of phone numbers. We don't need phone numbers. Go work on it, guys. Get back to me. I love it. Well, that's the kind of thing. Mary Jo is great. She covers a story, has more sources than anybody inside Microsoft, really is able to get these weird things out as well. What is Microsoft?
I'm a codename queen.
Codename queen. What is Microsoft up to? You just ask Mary Jo. She knows. Probably more than Ballmer knows.
Give me a code name and I'll track it down.
AllAboutMicrosoft.com. Thank you so much for coming back and joining us. I hope you'll come back more often, Mary Jo. We love having you on.
Thanks,
really appreciate it. Paul Theroux, of course, is now breathing a sigh of relief. The book got sent out, did it?
Oh, it did. Yeah, actually, I wanted badly to finish it last Friday, and I stayed up till 12:30 and didn't finish it. And then I was tossing and turning all night, so I got up at the crack of 6.
Wow.
Which is very unusual for me. And I just worked until it was done. It was roughly 12:49, I think. I didn't really keep track of the time, but it was a moment of celebration. And then I took a 3-hour nap. So. Yeah.
But not a bad moment of celebration. Much better having written than writing. We'll look for that on shelves any year now. It's called the Windows Vista Secrets Second Edition, covering Service Pack 1. And, of course, Paul also writes for the Windows IT Pro. He's the news editor there and does his great site, the Super Site for Windows at windowssupersite.com. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, sir.
We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.